I am State Senator Robin Wright Jones from the 5th District, City of St. Louis, on the east side, and I bring before you Linda Martinez, a constituent from my district. She is before you and has been recommended by the governor as the director of the Department of Economic Development. Ms. Martinez has spent 27 years in the legal profession. She has been a stalwart worker in our city of St. Louis on all types of bond and developer transaction deals. She's been able to stabilize our communities. She's been able to be involved in some of our most premier projects in the city as well as in the state. And she's been a strong community activist as well. I think she'd be an excellent choice for this position. Her background, as you'll read in her resume, has covered all types of development deals. That's bonds, bond transactions, airports, arenas, many of our infrastructure-type projects in the city. She, in doing so, and some of the businesses are large major corporations and some are small business enterprises and owners, which gives them the opportunity to be at a level where they gain new skills and can continue to turn those things over in our city. I bring her before you with great zeal for her appointment, and I look forward to a long working relationship with her.
Thank you. Okay, questions? Senator Callahan.
Good morning, Ms. Martinez. Looking through your resume, you have a tremendous background in the issues that are going to be in front of economic development in this very critical time. There has been some discussion and some calls regarding some pro bono work that you did involving the illegal immigration issue in Valley Park. I always believe in just so that there's no misunderstanding, can you kind of explain what that issue is about?
Thank you, Senator, because I would like to explain it. I think there's been a lot of background about the case, and I'd like to address it straightforward. My firm represented on a pro bono basis small business owners and landlords in the Valley Park area that were being subjected to a new set of ordinances that Valley Park adopted that put them at risk of losing their business license with no right to appeal, no right for a hearing, on mere allegations of renting to illegal aliens, undocumented workers, or employing undocumented workers. And what we were concerned about was several things. One, under state law, and it was ultimately decided, the city of Valley Park did not have the power to regulate immigration. The other issue was there going to be one set of rules in Valley Park? Was there going to be one set of rules in Olivet? Was there going to be another set of rules in Cape Girardeau? And fortunately, what I have seen is the state of Missouri has passed one consistent law for all businesses in all cities in the entire state, and I think that's a very good measure that will help small businesses so they don't have inconsistent a patchwork of legislation that would address the issue.
The issue you dealt with would be very similar to the one that this legislature dealt with where subcontractors and contractors did not want standards imposed on business entities and their basic rights and kind of the line between where government's responsibility is in immigration and how much do you impose on the mom-and-pop business, I guess, would be the issue, right?
That is part of the issue. I mean, how much,
effort. You turn them into immigration officials.
Right. And how much do you want to transfer the business
of
government?
How much does that cost that business, right?
Yeah, the cost. Because, here we are in a very critical time. Businesses are trying to develop their, expand their businesses, retain their existing employees, and maintain their existing business, and then you put on them the burden of enforcing the immigration laws. But the other concern was we had businesses that were operating in more than one city, and they were concerned that there would be this patchwork of regulations. And fortunately, now we have one consistent process for the entire state, and I intend to enforce it the same way that any other official would.
The last question I have, the new governor, when he was attorney general, enforced illegal immigrant. Will you support, as a director, that whatever strong policy we have in the state and all state laws?
Absolutely. I will enforce all laws.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Further questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Clemens.
Congratulations on your nomination. I wanted to ask you, in today's world, one of the biggest things is energy that we hear about all the time, and biofuels, and as economic development director, will you be increasing, decreasing investment and states' involvement in biofuels. Do you have some ideas along these lines?
I do absolutely have ideas, but, you know, the governor was very specific last night about increasing our investment in biofuels, and I will, you know, consider, you know, I will spend all my efforts doing that. In addition, I think that there's other technologies out there that I think that, again, the governor's looking for 21st century technologies, and we have companies that are battery companies. We have companies that are looking at making cars more lightweight by using more aluminum. There are lots of other technologies that I think that would be out there, and I would love to advance all of them because I think that in rebuilding our automotive industry, we have to be very thoughtful about all the other elements and the suppliers that could be feed into that process.
Well, in 2025, we're talking about 20% renewable energy. That's a goal. Is that realistic, do you think?
I apologize. I don't have specific information on that. But there are, you know, people out there doing wind turbines, and I think there's other sources out there. And I know there are people at a number of the universities that are doing research on turning cellulose into biofuels, you know, not just corn. So I think that we have lots of different things that are in the pipeline that will help us towards that goal.
You know, as ag chair, my interest would be specifically along those lines. Do you see yourself working with the ag department in these kind of issues? And because agriculture is the number one industry in the state of Missouri, and we want to continue that. So do you tell me anything about what you might be thinking about?
Well, I think agribusiness is something that is very important, and I don't think that we've done as good a job as we will be doing coordinating between the Agriculture Department and the Department of Economic Development. I've already started talking to Dr. Hagler about that, and I'm looking forward to working with them in many different areas. Another thing that we've been talking about in connection with agriculture is distribution of agriculture beyond our United States borders. And we have departments and people that are operating in other countries. Agriculture Department has people operating in other countries under contract or staffing offices over there to increase the demand for our products. And what we want to make sure we're doing is not duplicating efforts. So we want to make sure we're covering as many states, as you know, many countries as possible, and you know, having people possibly being both agriculture and economic development employees so that we're on a thoughtful and a coordinated basis moving forward to distribute our products.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Ms. Martinez. Just to follow up very briefly on the Valley Park issue, I just want to explore it, and obviously not getting into the legal issues of whether or not a fourth-class city could enact that kind of an ordinance, and I know that some of those legal issues were at play in that case, but as a matter or a statement of public policy that Valley Park made, which was basically it's unlawful for a business to hire an illegal worker, in setting forth a system to verify that, they had an affidavit that would be presented to the city. But having that as a matter of public policy, you agree that businesses should not be able to hire illegal workers, correct?
Absolutely.
Yes, and you support, obviously, the legislation, and I think Senator Callahan addressed this. The legislation that was passed last year was fairly comprehensive and addressed this and had the E-Verify system. Those are, as a matter of public policy, you support those efforts, correct?
I do, indeed.
And as a follow-up, I just want to, because Valley Park's in my district.
So,
I understand. I just wanted to ask, and want to make sure, because obviously the role that you're going to play, particularly in this critical time as we face these economic issues with Department of Economic Development, that there aren't any lingering issues or hostilities, that Valley Park obviously is an area that could use some economic development, and make sure that those issues don't carry on. Would that be fair to say?
I have no continued issues other than I think there's development opportunities in Valley Park. I mean, I don't mean to get into the weeds, but the levee's there. The area's now protected, and I know they've been looking at various development proposals, and I think that's an exciting opportunity for them.
So do I. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to echo the comments, congratulations on your appointment. May you live in interesting times, and please come and see us in 6 months and see if you are still as enthusiastic about holding this job as you do. You have great challenges and appreciate your willingness to serve. Giving up a partnership at a profitable law firm to come over here and deal with these tough times really shows your commitment to not only our state, but our state's economy as well. So I appreciate your willingness to serve. My questions are a little bit more specific in that I haven't been able to get answers to them, and you're the first person I've run into that now has to answer my questions.
Okay.
So congratulations. Lucky you. I would like to know a little bit more about this small business development loan program Governor Nixon has put out. It's my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's envisioned, if the Missouri Development Finance Board adopts it through its current membership, that there would be 80 $25,000 loans. Every small business person I talk to says a $25,000 loan is a joke. Why are they wrong?
Well, I think what we're trying to do is see what we can do to jumpstart our entrepreneurial capabilities. When there was a major layoff in the 90s at McDonnell Douglas, there was, I think, 20% layoff. One of the things that happened was all these people saw themselves in a different light. I mean, some of them saw themselves as unemployed and were looking to go back to businesses and go back into the same kind of environment they were in before. But a number of them started businesses. And what they were looking for is, instead of borrowing on their MasterCard or their Visa, as a jump start of seed capital. So we're talking about really trying to spark the entrepreneurial economy. And people who have good ideas that can get business plans through the SBDCs can learn about applying for loans. I think what I'm trying to envision that program is really going back to the very basics. Instead of seeing 219,000 unemployed people as people that are collecting unemployment checks, but seeing it as 219,000 entrepreneurial possibilities.
Would we be better off giving 10 $250,000 loans as opposed to 80 $25,000 loans? I'm not arguing the merits of the altruistic nature in which it's proposed. My concerns, quite frankly, are we going to be giving a $25,000 loan to somebody that doesn't need a loan, can't pay that loan back, does not have a good business model? Will you or the Missouri Development Finance Board study every business plan and model? Or what are the criteria for you to qualify for these loans and in which to issue these loans? Most of the tax credits that are issued by Missouri Development Finance Board, they hire $25,000 worth of consultants to file the reports that are in there before you issue that. So my question, and I don't know if it's a program that's going to go forward or not, as I understand it, the Missouri Development Finance Board, I think with the governor's new appointments that will serve as ex officio members, may have a majority on that. I don't know. But as that program moves forward, I'm very much interested in what the Missouri Development Finance Board is doing on a multitude of issues. And if this becomes a, I don't know, handout of $25,000 and there's no concrete, this is what we're basing it on, this is where it's going, I think it will be an issue. So I still don't know what that is going to be, and I guess the reason we don't is Missouri Development Finance Board hasn't adopted. But I'm trying to get an understanding of what your vision is, how that is actually going to help or direct us in any way, shape, or form. So I raise that with you as the director, and hopefully we'll be able to move along in those areas.
I think you bring up one micro issue with regard to the Missouri Development Finance Board and the $25,000 loans, and we are in the process of developing criteria to make an application to the Missouri Development Finance Board. What we don't want to do is reinvent the wheel. There are other organizations out there that do micro lending, and what we want to do is essentially put our program with an established staff of people who do evaluations of business plans, do evaluations of small micro lending, and can use our funds without a whole new set of overhead to deploy it for the purposes that are approved by the Missouri Development Finance Board. But what I think the bigger point that you make, and I agree with it 100%, and it really came very clear to me yesterday when I was talking to some people from the Missouri Technology Corporation, but what we're looking for is a continuum from the microloan program to the people who need the $200,000 loans, to the people who need $500,000 loans, million, multi-millions. I think what we need is a continuum from a dream to a marketing, reality, to commercialization of technology or other ideas. And that isn't just on technology businesses, that's agribusinesses, that's low-tech businesses. And I think what, the challenge is to look at that continuum and make sure that all levels of equity, venture capital, debt, is available to all companies at all levels and sizes. And so what I've been trying to get a handle on, and I apologize, you know, at the 10th day of my job, I really haven't gotten a complete handle on it, but I really want to see that we have that continuum for, you know, companies, all different kinds of companies, and where do our existing programs fit in. Maybe the Missouri Development Finance Board isn't the organization for the $250,000 loan, but maybe there's, you know, we have, you know, block grant funds, we have action loan funds, we have other programs, and I want to make sure that, like I said, the entire continuum is covered and to the extent possible. And then also working with people that need to go to a traditional bank, you know, because most people borrow money from a bank, and are there programs that we could do that would facilitate guarantees so that they could increase their possibility of getting the loans that they need?
And I appreciate your perspective. I believe that elections have consequences, and there are definitely going to be policy changes that move forward within this administration. But as it relates to the fees that would be used to pay for this small business loan program, I am a tremendous advocate of the DREAM initiative started by the Blunt administration. I am an outstate guy. I am a rural guy. I am that part of Missouri that is often overlooked, that was not overlooked during the DREAM initiative. And to have a clear, articulated policy by this Department of Economic Development as it relates to, we are substituting from the DREAM initiative to a small business loan package, I want to see that proposal. I want to see why that is a good proposal, because I've got two communities that are DREAM communities that I can tell you have seen tremendous advantages from that, actually having at their disposal the $25,000 consultants to do the plans that seem to come so easily for St. Louis and Kansas City. So I would appreciate you keeping the General Assembly in the loop as we move forward, and I would just encourage you to, unlike the last administration, don't believe the Missouri Development Finance Board is your offline budget issuer of whatever you want, but you can't get through the General Assembly. I believe that reforms need to be made to the Development Finance Board, and I'm going to be continuing to do that with the process in these tough economic times, and I hope I can count on your support as we do that.
You can, and as I read the budget, the DREAM is not – the loans are not in lieu of DREAM. They're in addition.
You've only got so many fees that can come out of that department, and I'd like to see how you do all of that. I'd like to see how you do all of that in the budget.
There are reserves at the Missouri Development Finance Board, and to me, this is the rainy day that we've been waiting for to use those reserves.
Okay. Well, I see that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other questions, Ms. Martinez? Senator Engler?
Thank you for being – I appreciate you coming by the other day. Several things. First, I'll start off by saying, as I told you, that I plan on supporting you. I think the governor should have the ability, if he wants to. I've got all these background things. If he wants to have somebody that's donated to the organizations you have, I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with somebody donating to Governor Nixon. I don't have a problem with if he's okay with your appointment and the message it sends on immigration, illegal immigration. We can do that, but there's several things that in this thing that do in fact concern me in a different light. One, the money for quality jobs. Do you think that there should be any type of cap on there at all? The House is saying there shouldn't be any type of cap at all on.
Well, I think the theory that allows us to do the program is that the new jobs generate income taxes for the state of Missouri, and essentially what the Missouri Quality Jobs Act has done is give the company the benefit of those income taxes that the employees would otherwise pay for a period of time. And if that is a good message and a good creative incentive for small companies and large companies, you know, I guess my question is, if more companies come, you know, wouldn't we want to keep making that same incentive available? Why would we say you've hit the cap, and now people who have exactly the same kind of job creation impact on our state don't get the same incentive?
I understand that point, but have to do this budget thing. And I know after hearing last night how we're going to add $700 million to the budget, cut $250 million, and start off with an $800 million deficit, that balances. Maybe the fact that we have an unlimited amount of money to spend on it, it's not a problem to budget, because it's always easy to budget unlimited. I have a concern. You've done a lot of and you've got a great background on tax credits and different financing mechanisms. You have a lot of premier customers that you've been working for. I've been told that those are going to come forward, so there wouldn't be any impropriety for somebody either taking advantage of the fact that they've been working on with you, or the fact that they've been held to a higher standard because they've been working against you. Is that going to be forthcoming? Or
I have submitted to my general counsel and to the governor's office the proposal for essentially a three-pronged strategy for dealing with existing former clients of my firm that I was involved with. Anybody I was working on a project with at the time I was nominated, I will not be the person that makes the decision. And actually, that's really only one client that I can identify that fits in that category. As to projects that I worked on previously, and I was involved in the documentation of the build program or whatever, I will not be the person that addresses any default or deficiencies in those contracts. It just would not be prudent. But as to anybody else, I think I'm in a position to hold them to the same standards that anybody else would be held to.
Then the final last point is more a general thing, and I've told you about this. One of the things that concerns me is the governor came down to our caucus and talked about the importance of DNR and EcoDevo, and we're going to get the most qualified. And it just seems that in DNR, EcoDevo, insurance, labor, the most qualified person is always an attorney. And although I really have nothing against attorneys, when I did economic development, I did quite a bit of it in my town. I never considered putting my attorney that did the legal work as the front person to do the marketing and selling, because most people will tell you in economic development, selling and marketing is the key component. And I didn't consider putting my actuary in that position to be the one that does the sell job and that type of thing. And the governor's has decided in your area that he would like somebody that knows how to do the legal work for tax credits as the marketing person for the economic development efforts of the state. That probably concerns me more than anything. That's not a reflection on you, because you're completely qualified in the other area. It's more of a statement. Maybe I just don't understand how that will work, but I would hope that you'll be the marketing person for the EcoDevo developments around the country. But it's just that's a tough, and it's tough to say, because it has nothing against you or personally. That's a different aspect of expertise that I would have thought that in some of these areas we would have got somebody that would probably been a little bit more of an expert in those areas. I know that's not really a question, but
I'd like to address it. There's a number of points there. First, lawyers need to be loved also.
It's just hard.
Well, in my own personal practice, I think I would consider myself more of a counselor than just a lawyer. I think a lot of people think that lawyers are scriveners, and when you do transactions over and over again and you work with companies that don't do financings every day, but you are doing financings every day, you're in there helping them make the evaluation of a commitment of capital, whether to borrow money, how does this affect their balance sheet, what are they going to say to their shareholders. And it's not just about what documents did I write, but it's really talking about their business plan, their business model, their long-range capital plans. And I've been intimately involved in those kinds of decisions. It's not just that I was a lawyer. In terms of marketing, obviously I've marketed my own, profession and myself and my hours, the hours of other people in my firm for 27 years to the largest companies in this state, in this country, and they continue to use my services, so I think I know how to market. But the most important part is it's not just me, Linda Martinez, one person marketing the state to everybody in the state, this country, in this world. There's a whole team of people back at DED and at the Missouri Partnership that are going to be involved in marketing, and it's going to be a team effort. And we're going to call on you all to do that also. It's not just one person that's going to market, but I'm going to mobilize an entire team.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions? Okay. Senator Champion.
Mrs. Martinez, back to the illegal immigration issue, and my mind was on the expense to small businesses to do that and the responsibility they have of trying to enforce that. And back to the E-Verify, I heard someone ask you and you said you did support that. And it may be a little premature to ask. You may not have much experience with this part of it yet. But do you know how that's working? I understand it's free, free service to businesses. And I guess I'm thinking about, I don't know all the details of why it would be so expensive to enforce making sure you're not hiring somebody who's breaking the law. But is the E-Verified, to your knowledge, working? And is there a way we can promote it? Are the businesses aware of it? Do they feel a responsibility? Is there any obligation to use it? Can you address that a little bit further?
I apologize. I really don't know how it's affecting small businesses, but I'd like to look into that. Maybe we can get the small business centers to help us understand the impact to local businesses.
So you would support trying to promote that and show them that it's available and seeing what I don't like to put burdens on small businesses either, but then you know, the public is outraged at people getting jobs who are breaking the law, and this seems like a very good service, and I'd love to see that really promoted. So
I can certainly do that. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah. Further questions? I have a couple questions. Senator Lager has asked for some responses from you from questions. Can you tell me where you're at in that process?
I think he was asking for information about what I was doing with regard to former clients, and I have provided that to the general counsel and to the governor's office.
But not to Senator Lager?
I can certainly provide him the memo, absolutely.
Okay, because I don't think he feels at this point that his questions have been satisfied on that.
I think he's looking for a list of clients, and I have not said that I would provide a list of clients. I've set up the methodology, but I don't think it would be appropriate to provide a list of clients, because what I'm trying to do is set up, like I said, the three-pronged set where if I was working on somebody's project, I'm not going to work on that, and I will not exercise any discretion. If I prepared the documents, I will recuse myself, and I will not make any decisions. But as to everybody else, I feel I'm capable of applying together with the entire department, you know, it's consistent standards.
Yeah, and I would tell you, to save the floor leader time tomorrow, what I intend to do until he has been satisfied, either I satisfy him in this committee or he gets satisfied on the Senate floor, what I will probably do is call an executive session tomorrow morning at 9:30 and vote your appointment out at that time, assuming that he is satisfied at that point, and give you that time to meet with him and work through that discussion. So,
okay, thank you.
Senator Crowell.
Along those lines, if I could, Mr. Chairman, that brings an inter- are you still a partner of Brian Cave?
No, I've resigned.
Okay, so you have resigned and you have no ownership or equity stake in Brian Cave anymore?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
None.
So you had the partnership has bought your shares in the law firm back, so you don't feel there would be any financial interest in Brian Cave representing anyone before EcoDevo at this point?
I will not have any problems working with Brian Cave consistently with anybody else who comes before the department.
Okay. So I understand there's no residual financial relationship with the law firm of Brian Cave anymore.
They still hold my equity at this point in time.
And I
will have it back within 12 months.
Explain that process.
Consistent with my partnership agreement, it's repaid in two installments, one 6 months later and one 12 months later.
Is that equity frozen when you leave, or say Brian Cave gets hired by a big economic development client, and would your equity go up?
It would not go up. It is fixed at the dollar amount that I contributed.
And that is not a percentage of your profits? Explain that.
It was the amount of equity that I contributed was a function of my percentage of target income. And I paid that in, and I will only receive exactly what I deposited.
Plus interest or nothing?
Nothing. It is equity for which I receive no return other than the actual equity itself.
And your partnership agreement says the law firm has 12 months in which to, pay you back your equity stake.
Right.
And then that will 100% sever your relationship with the law firm of Brian Cave.
Right now I share nothing in the profits, I share nothing in the expenses, I have no obligations, I have no rights, I'm not a partner at that firm.
And that was effective when?
I think it was the 12th.
Of January?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Engler?
Yeah, to answer a question he probably didn't want to ask, they're not looking for another partner right now. Just kidding. On that line, it made me.
Are you sure?
You don't have any oral agreement that after this term of your chairing or being the department head, would be over that you would be offered another opportunity for partner in that firm?
I have no oral or written agreement.
Very good. I wanted to reemphasize what Senator Krause said earlier. I'm in partnership, and we have the same exact terms, so that's not anything outrageous. So I think that's great, but I want to say that is a very, very big sacrifice to give up your partnership to come to this work for the state, and we appreciate that.
Well, I'm looking forward to serving. I mean, I really am. I think that I'd always thought about what I would be doing when I retired, and I thought that this was actually the time. I shouldn't wait till sometime in the future.